Justice Wright leave the courtroom. And you may proceed.
Chief Justice, a member of the court, good morning to all of you.
It's kind of lonely down at this end. Glance at me once in a while.
I'll try to do that. A couple summers ago, a retired couple in Fairbury were on a morning walk. They walked south of their apartment for the first time since they'd moved in there a while before the accident. And as they approached the defendant's home, two large black dogs that had been left unattended on the front porch, which is about 25 foot from the sidewalk, charged out at him. Mr. Grammer had experience with dogs. In fact, he'd raised big dogs in his deposition. And he tried to get the dogs to stop, and they did not. He testified that the dogs were snarling and growling and running very quickly. The dog on the chain was stopped by the chain before he did any harm or did any further. The other dog ran free, and while this was all happening, Mrs. Grammer testified that she was frightened, thought the dogs were vicious, although she wasn't sure because she didn't know them. And she tripped and fell in the parking area between the sidewalk and the curb and sustained a physical injury. The trial court dismissed the case on summary judgment based on the Donner case, essentially, and the Donner line of cases. He made an interesting ruling. He cited the wrong statute in his order, which I think matters because it shows that he really wasn't aware of the changes that had been made in the law, because he cites the old version of the statute that did not contain the word injury. He essentially found that because this dog that was loose stopped once Mrs. Grammer was down on the ground and didn't attack her when she was down, that was enough to take this case into the summary judgment world based on one of three definitions in the Bonner case of what chasing meant. And he...
Did he explore the other definitions?
No. Didn't even mention them. And a couple of the other definitions were a lot less onerous in terms of proof. One of them was follow quickly or persistent in order to catch or harm. That's the one he landed on and said we couldn't prove that. We didn't prove it. Or that he actually made a finding as a matter of law that the fact that the dog stopped and didn't bite, lick, kick, snarl further, that proved that this was a dog that was covered by the Donner case, which really, everything goes back to that Donner case, because the Donner case essentially found that if the dog is acting playfully, the strict liability statute doesn't apply, is what the Donner case stands for. And another deposition was to make a runaway or drive or to go and pursue. And it's because, and these people were walking by the front door of the house, and she was moving along, and she fell down and got hurt. And actually, the dog was only there doing nothing for anywhere from 1 to 4 seconds because the owner came out and called Pat. So the judge made a finding of what the dog's intent was. Yeah, after saying we don't have to find what the dog's intent was, he found that the dog didn't intend to do anything that matched up with the definition he selected. It did that one sentence after saying we don't have to prove what the intent or know what the dog was thinking is. This case should just go to a jury. The other cases that are relied on in the decision, he didn't rely on, but they're relied on in the brief. Are all cases that involve dogs that were stipulated to be playful. Stipulated. Every single one of the other cases that was decided how 54601 should be interpreted involved cases that were admittedly playful dogs. This is not admitted in this case. We contend these dogs were aggressive, vicious, snarling. There is some evidence, notwithstanding the claim in the brief, that that Mrs. Brammer thought she saw the dog's teeth bared. Whether that's a pivotal fact, I don't know. But what we're really asking is, you know, we don't need to decide whether the Donner case should be overruled. I think we should win on summary judgment just on the fact that the court overstepped its bounds. The court acted as a jury, made a factual determination. The court didn't give us the benefit of the most favorable inferences that could be drawn from our evidence. He just didn't do it. He jumped ahead. And he ignored the amendment to the law that had come down in 1993. And I know that the court has interpreted 54601 since 1993 or 92 in the Underhill case. But in the Underhill case, part of the legislative history that I think is pivotal wasn't apparently argued or mentioned. It's not mentioned in the decision. The part where the introducers were saying, we want it to be loud and clear that the terms of the chasing, killing, et cetera, that are in 54601 are to be construed disjunctively, not conjunctively.
Have we ever construed it conjunctively?
Well, I think that's what Donner does. I think that's essentially what Donner does. Because otherwise, otherwise you don't have this whole mental thing involved in it. Figure out whether there's an intent and so forth. But that's what Donner does. The statute was intended to be a strict liability statute. What we're really asking in terms of overruling Donner is to give us a strict liability statute. Instead of sort of a strict liability statute, we're kind of a strict liability statute. We're a strict liability statute with lots of tricks and quirks and strange interpretations of the statute. A statute like this is supposed to be construed liberally to affect its purposes. The purposes of this act was to protect kids and children, or kids and other persons, from dogs attacking. The Donner cases, at least the ones that are cited in the appellee's brief, done just the opposite. It's thwarted the effort. It says that if it looks like it's playful, that it's okay. If a judge finds that it's a playful activity, or if they stipulate to it, which was everybody else did when the case went up to the court, then it's not covered by this law. I don't know. I think it can lead to some absurd interpretations. I'm a grandfather. I could see a little child standing in our yard and a dog that completely inadvertently runs by and bumps into him and being playful, and the kid falls over and gets terribly injured. All you got to do is watch an NFL football game and see that snap back on the field. And that's the kind of absurd result that the Donner line of cases is leaving you. Is that if it's playful, an owner isn't responsible. In this case, the people that are responsible are the retired couple who did nothing wrong, and society, as opposed to the owner of the dog. We're just asking you to interpret the statute in light of the latest changes and in light of that additional legislative history that was not argued in the Underhill case. Judge McCormick's dissent in Underhill is a blueprint for why the statute should be overruled. I can't say it any better than he wrote it. I'd like you to give it another look. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Renner, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Sean Renner. I'm a lawyer with the Klein Williams Law Firm. I appear today on behalf of the appellees, the Luckings. I'd like to start with the language of the statute. Before I respond directly to some of the arguments you just heard, 54601 sub 1 sub A makes the owner of a dog liable if their person injured is not a trespasser and is bitten. 601 sub 1 sub B says that a person, the owner of the dog, is liable for damages that accrue, quote, by reason of such dog or dogs killing, wounding, injuring, worrying, or chasing any person or sheep or other domestic animal. It's an interesting statute. It's been in the state since 1877, and for most of its existence, it applied to the rural context of dogs injuring livestock. That was the original intent of the statute.
If you would focus on injuring, the party was in, plaintiffs were injured here, were they not?
The language of the statute is damages accrued by reason of such dog, and in the context you're talking about, injuring any person, any sheep, et cetera, et cetera. The evidence is undisputed that neither dog touched Mrs. Grammer. Mrs. Grammer saw the dogs coming, backed up, tripped, and fell. Mr. Rame characterized her as being frightened, and that's probably a fair inference from the undisputed facts in the record. The sole gloss this court has put on injuring comes in a 1992 amendment to the statute. Donners versus Playmates decided in 1975. It's this court's major construction of the statute. The court recognized that the statute's in derogation of the common law. If we go back to law school, we all know the one-bite rule. The owner of a dog is not liable unless the owner knows of the vicious propensities of the dog. That vicious propensity is ordinarily established by the dog having previously bitten a person, and that, therefore, makes the owner negligent if the owner doesn't take steps to restrain the dog or keep the dog from harming someone thereafter.
So is your point that because there was no physical contact, there wasn't any injury?
I think that's true, Your Honor. The one gloss the court has put on injuring, and this relates to something Mr. Rame said also, was in the Hobelman case, which argued that the amendment in 1992 changed everything by adding injury. And what the court said was that enactment, and legislative history couldn't be clearer on this point, that enactment was made to overrule one previous decision of this court, where the court held that a dog that ran into an elderly woman, knocked her over, broke her hip, did not wound within the meaning of the statute because there was no break of the skin. And the court looked at some common law definitions of wounding as where the statute comes from.
So let me get it straight. Your argument is injury applies only if the dog actually touches somehow?
It has to be caused by reason of the dog injuring. And I think the natural reading of by reason of the dog injuring is that their dog has to do something other than be a dog in a yard. These dogs ran at the Grammers. That's undisputed.
Well, what if the dog growled and snarled?
The growl, the evidence shows growl. I don't believe the word snarl is actually used, and I believe Mr. Rame is wrong when he says that dogs' teeth were bare. I think the evidence shows that dogs didn't bare their teeth. The dog on the chain obviously stopped at the sidewalk. It could not have gone beyond the sidewalk. It was restrained. The evidence from the Luckings, the depositions in the record as Exhibit Number 4, shows that these two dogs have some history. The dog that was chained is Riley, and she is the larger of the two dogs. These are inside dogs. They live inside. They were let out that morning to do their daily constitutional before going back inside to eat breakfast, and that's why they were out on the front porch. The dog on the chain, Riley, was restrained, stopped at the sidewalk. The reason the other dog, Zoe, the smaller dog, was not restrained is because Zoe is a rescue dog. The Luckings are the fourth family that Zoe has had, and in the previous three families, things didn't go well. If you put Zoe on a chain, she hyperventilates and freaks out, and that's the reason she wasn't on the chain. The evidence is also undisputed from Mr. Lucking that Zoe's never left the yard. Zoe, he characterized her as a nervous dog. She's timid. It was exactly his testimony.
Mr. Renner, what do we do with the word worrying?
The court's defined it, and it defined it based on the dictionary definition that was presumably at play some time ago. Worrying is a term that, again, comes as from our agricultural past, and it refers directly to a dog nipping at the heels of a sheep in order to drive the sheep, tearing at a sheep, biting a sheep. And definition the court adopted in the Holden case, which is precedes the last one. Holden was 2009. Holden, I believe, is 1990s, something like that. So there's an existing definition this court has already done.
So the dog would actually have to nip at?
In order to worry under the existing definition that comes out of the Holden case, again, subsequent to Donner by 20 years or so. That's correct. And that worrying comes directly from the dictionary definition. What this court has done is said, this statute is archaic. The legislature didn't start from scratch. It's in derogation of the common law. So rather than a liberal construction, the construction rule is you strictly construe a statute that derogates common law. And the court looked at the ordinary purpose of the statute, which comes from our agricultural past. It recognized in Holden that not every act of every dog creates strict liability. And so the issue that the court has to decide is, what is it in the statute that creates strict liability? The Grammars could sue for negligence still. They could attempt to show that these dogs have vicious propensities. I think the record wouldn't allow them to do that under any circumstances. So the question is, in the context of the statute the legislature has passed to create this strict liability, does the actions of these dogs, which aren't in dispute, a jury isn't going to have any more facts to look at than what you folks know. This happened very quickly. The dogs returned as soon as they were called by their owner. The evidence is undisputed that Zoe, the dog that was not restrained, once Mrs. Grammer fell, Zoe stood there. Zoe wasn't barking when Darren Lucking came back out of the house. Zoe never attempted to attack Mrs. Grammer while she was on the ground, never approached her, never touched her. Zoe's some feet away from Mrs. Grammer when she falls. So unless you're going to say that a dog that's restrained and a dog that never leaves the yard, the owners of that are automatically liable when someone becomes afraid and falls, the liability just doesn't attach to the statute. I don't think you can get there under your previous case.
And you're saying regardless of the dog's behavior, if there's no contact, there's no liability under the statute.
Under this court's existing definitions of what the words in the statute mean, I believe that's correct.
And under Underhill, we didn't take up, did we, playful versus hostile?
You did not, and that doesn't come into play here, too. When you read the district court's opinion, the word playful doesn't show up in it. The district court did not hold that these are playful dogs under Donner versus Plymouth. What the district court did was to say, our Supreme Court has construed this statute. It has given us definitions of these terms with the exception of injury. An injury comes later on. And if you look at the complaint alleges that the portion of the statute that applies is that these dogs charged and chased Mrs. Grammer. Well, charged isn't in the statute, and I think there's a reason that word was chosen, because this doesn't sound like chasing as that word is ordinarily used in common parlance. Let me offer an example that I think might help elucidate the point I'm trying to make. One of the words, and Justice Castle mentioned this, one of the words in the statute is worrying. And this court asked about what does worrying mean in the Holden case and referred to nipping at sheep's heels and that sort of thing. If you were looking for a single word in the statute that might describe, at least in today's parlance, if we were starting from scratch, what happened here, you might argue, although the plaintiffs do not, that Mrs. Grammer was worried when the dogs came across the yard, and that therefore the defendants are liable because of her worrying and then falling. That would at least arguably take you out of the realm of where a physical contact happens, which has been the case for all the previous cases this court has decided under the statute. And yet that argument isn't made here. And I think the reason it isn't made here is because Donner versus Plymouth did a straight-up, honest job of trying to decide what this statute means in the context of the common law and what the legislature's actually said.
Did the judge in this case examine all of the...
I'm sorry?
Did the judge in this case examine all of the options under the law that we've earlier defined?
I think so. He doesn't mention injury, and I didn't go back and look at the briefs, but the mention of injury by the appellants in this case is almost in passing.
Didn't he only talk about chase?
He did, but that's because that was the argument that was presented to him, is chase. And again, that's because we don't have killing, biting, worrying, at least as far as this court has defined it. And then injury comes in later, and the court's definition of injury, to the extent it's defined it, comes from this legislative history.
Well, I think where this line of questioning is, was the judge applying the current version of the statute?
I don't think there's any question that he was. He doesn't mention injure in the opinion itself, but he addressed exactly the argument that was made to him below, and that is that these dogs chased Mrs. Grammer, or she was concurred damages by reason of the dog chasing.
And then how do we know that the trial judge was applying the current statute?
The only possible way it wasn't the correct statute is if he didn't refer to the version that includes injury. And I frankly don't recall the quotation from the statute, but I think it's pretty clear when you read the statute. He understood what the issue was in front of him. What he did was apply the law that this court has held previously to define those terms in the strict liability statute and apply it to the undisputed facts of the case. I see I'm out of time. I'd be happy to answer any more questions if there are. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? A minute and 33 seconds, Mr. Rehm.
Thank you. There was a remark about this being related back to our agricultural society in the 1800s.
I think the cases actually say that the statute was passed in 1907, and there was an amendment in 1941, and then in a 1961 amendment that further changed the law, and that was arose from the legislator's concern. I'm reading from Donner right now. Legislative concern for children and adults being attacked by dogs in the Douglas County area. Douglas County farms, I mean, I think it's not a great leap to think that there's some concern for the modern usage of dogs and that sort of thing. The worrying part is an ancient definition. Donner also said that when you construe statutes that we're supposed to construe them using modern and popular senses of the words, which I think gives you the right, you're directed by them to upgrade the how we're looking at this. She was worried. She testified, in effect, that she was afraid and was trying to get away. I mean, that was one of our arguments about inferences. We don't have to argue every possible favorable inference that would preserve our case. The statute is being construed to defeat the purpose of the act. They're throwing up one more effort to defeat the idea of protecting human beings from dogs doing things. And we can't read these dogs' minds, but we can see what they're doing, and people are going to get afraid, whether they're touched or not, and people are going to fall. And I suspect that if this doesn't work this time, maybe the next case is going to be somebody that fell and died from a dog that didn't touch him.
Do you agree with Mr. Renner that you could sue under a negligence theory?
You know, I'm not sure that I can, honestly. I'm not a res judicata expert. Maybe I had to plead it to begin with. I don't know. I mean, I thought this statute and these facts are distinguished from those old cases where they stipulate dog for play was familiar with the victim. This is not the case. It's a different case than everything that's been decided in the court on SJs.
You would agree that when worrying first went into the statute, it had what you have now characterized as the archaic definition.
Yeah, and in all candor, if you look it up on the internet, about 60% of the definitions of worrying still have the old meaning. I'd never heard of it. I grew up on a farm and all that.
And what would be the jurisprudential basis for us to undertake to update that definition?
Well, I think you look at what Justice McCormick suggested before, that by inserting the word injured in there, injuring,
that they meant to change the meaning of worrying?
It means it doesn't have to be construed along with every other word in the statute. It means that chasing can be construed independently, and that injured can be construed independently. I mean, that's the essence of his dissent. And that's particularly important with the legislative history, where somebody got in front of the legislative committee and said, we want this clear that the string of words, killing, blah, 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 or chasing, are to be interpreted disjunctively. Well, that allows the court to interpret whether or not this was the result of chasing, one of the definitions of chasing, or just the injury part.
Okay.
But worrying,
I don't think it's not. I don't think it comes into play. I don't think it has to be considered.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Brozek versus Brozek. Justice Wright is also recused from this case.